Hey guys, Steve here. The Nina Project recently got AOL 4.0 working. So if you want to use Comic Sans MS and all its glory on AOL 4.0, you can go to nina.chat for more information. I'll also put a link in the show notes. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to AOL. Welcome to AOL Underground.
Would you please state your handle and the years you're active on AOL?
Yeah, I went by Nails. I think it was from like 95 until probably about 99.
Nice. When did you first use a computer?
Probably 1990. I can't remember if it was a Tandy 1000 or a Commodore 64.
And then what was your first experience on the internet?
That's actually a different one because I didn't start with AOL like most people did. Most people started with AOL and then went up. But I actually, I grew up in Ireland, not in the United States, so we didn't have America Online. So I came from IRC first. So I was already on FNET, Downnet, that kind of stuff before it became popular to move from AOL to IRC.
Do you remember the people who were like sharing wares and stuff back then? There's like servers and whatnot?
In IRC or on AOL?
IRC. Like people would host like files and stuff.
Yeah, there was a bunch of people. There was Shizza, there was all the guys in Codeine. Codeine was actually an IRC group, not an AOL group, which is a weird thing because I think a lot of people think it was an AOL group and it wasn't. We had some guys that moved over that went to AOL. We had some guys that went to Prodigy, CompuServe, MSN. We kind of just tried to take over all of them, I guess.
Okay, so you said Codeine, and how do you spell that?
Codeine.
Okay, but it sounds like coding, but it's Codeine?
It's one of the two, I don't know. Different people did a different set of different ways, like it's like wares. Some of us said wares, some of us called it wares. It was all, you know, back in the day when there was nobody talking to each other, so nobody really knew what the pronunciations of anything was.
It's true, I actually always said wares. But I'm curious. So you said Shizza. I was actually in the Shizza AOL group, but you were saying Shizza came from IRC?
Shizza was on both. They had an AOL department that was big on AOL, but I think it was later. And they had an IRC group as well. And there's another one that most people know. I think it was called UPS or USPS or something like that. They were IRC as well.
Okay, then they got so big, they created UPSS, and they just did mass mailing, UPSS did.
Yes.
Okay, that's really interesting. Okay, so you were in the group coding or coding in IRC, and then you moved to AOL, is that right?
Yeah, I came over to the States when I was 14, and we had access to America Online, and there were people who were in that group on IRC that were messing around with AOL, and I kind of got interested because AOL was so poorly written and it was so easy to do whatever you wanted, whenever you wanted to do it. There was almost like nobody at AOL had any idea about cybersecurity or, you know, even stuff like the FDO language is so poorly written that it was like laughable that people were like, I can't figure it out without a manual. Like, it's literally right here. Set up your token, set up your atom, throw your hex in there and just run it. It's that easy. So we got kind of into the AOL scene a little bit, but I was only really part-time AOL. I was mostly IRC.
Interesting. So when you moved over to AOL, were you going to private rooms like right away then, or how'd that work?
I don't really remember if I went to private rooms right away. I was listening to some of your other podcasts, and the Chronic was talking about the tips and tricks rooms. A couple of us used to hang out in there as well, just to see what people were working on, what people were doing, what the tips and tricks were, and how we could exploit them. I never really hung out in any of the VB rooms. I know those are popular. No, we used to get, I forget who wrote it. I think it was a guy named BMB wrote a room generator, and every day it would generate a new room for us to all go into, and it was just random character strings. You'd have to cut and copy it. You couldn't just, I mean, I guess you could type it out, but wouldn't make much sense to.
You talking about the Shiza room generator?
It might have been the Shiza room generator. Shiza was, there was a guy named Shiza too. There was a group and there was a guy. And he's actually one of the founders of GOL, Gods Online. But before that, it might have been the Shiza room generator, or at least a precursor to it. But yeah, I never really did anything in the VB rooms like a lot of these guys did later. I don't even know when those started, to be honest.
What is God's Online?
It was just a it's just a group of us. I know Magus and Fungi were in there. Haas and Lith were in there. Red King was in there. Moxie was in there. There's a bunch of others. Obviously, I'm gonna forget a bunch of the names because it was so long ago, but it was all of the quote unquote elite programmers on AOL. We just didn't want to be bothered with what we were calling script kiddies back then, but we didn't even notice that we were basically script kiddies.
That's really funny. Wait, so were you also on Gods Online?
Yeah.
Okay. And I remember Moxie. I forget why I thought he was so cool. Do you remember what Moxie made?
Moxie was cool, dude. Moxie was the man. He's one of the first guys I met when I came over to AOL, and he was just super chill. He helped me with Lucifer X, and he ended up releasing an application called Purge 97, but I don't think I ever looked at it. I don't know what it even did. I think it did what everything else did. All the apps did the same thing. We all thought we were so creative. They were all mass mailers, scrollers, free time on AOL back then. That's all they did.
Yeah, it's funny, and they all felt like, oh, I have, got this sweet new app. This is super cool. But yeah, they just did pretty much the same thing.
They all did pretty much the same. Some of them were programmed a little bit better than others. Obviously it was hilarious because Haas and Lith wrote their first, I think it was the first Mad Cow, was in SendKeys, which was funny. But I mean, at least they used window focus so that they weren't just sending stuff into the abyss. But yeah, like everything back then was pretty much the same. And it's a lot to do with because that group of people that released like your big name stuff, I don't even think mine was that big. I don't even remember. We were all programming in the same rooms together, bouncing ideas and shit off each other. So nothing new ever really came out of it. It was really just a learning experience. A lot of the quote unquote actual hacking that we did on AOL, we didn't include in any of our programs. So things like manipulating FDO, even before the Star Tool came out or Master AOL or whatever we're going to call it, we didn't include any of that in the applications just because we didn't want other people to have it.
Tell me about manipulating FTO before the Star Tool.
Before I got on here, I was listening to the podcast that you did with the guys that worked at AOL, and that was a funny one because it really was. It really was like that. It was like the Wild West. It was us doing whatever we wanted and them trying to catch us, and then us doing it again, and then them trying to catch us. I don't think anybody ever really got into any kind of trouble at all for what they did on AOL because AOL never reported anything. They didn't really care. I think they were having almost as much fun as we were.
Yeah, it's pretty rare. There was some. I think there was the heavy hardcore AOL for free.
I don't
He got in
even know.
trouble.
I don't even know who he is.
You should look it up. He was a Yale student, and he I think he didn't have to go to jail. He just had to like pay a fine or something, and then do community service or something like that. But yeah, I think it was like it might have been for Mac, but it was a way that you could get AOL for free.
Yeah, that's how they all worked, though. All of the ones that gave it for free. That's how Lucifer X worked, too. You'd open up a whatever window you wanted to do anything in. Like, say you open up a chat window, then you'd go into a free area and it would quote unquote hide. It would take you out of the chat room, but it didn't. It just hid the chat room so that you couldn't use it. So in order to use anything for free, you'd just hide that free window and then reshow the windows that you wanted to be using. So it worked with everything from instant messaging to chat to checking your mail to, I think at one point checking your mail was free, like way back, way early in the 90s, like 93, 94. I think it was free. I don't remember. But your keywords, things like that, that's all the applications did was hide and show windows.
FDO stuff with it. So you didn't have the Star Tool or the Master Tool. How did you know about it and stuff, and like what were you doing with it?
That's another good one because they were talking about Nock on the other episode too, and I don't think there was a single day that I used AOL that we didn't have some kind of Trojan horse inside Knock. I mean, I don't know if they found them, if they didn't find them, if they were paying attention. All I know is that they didn't really know security very well at all. And it's like they had, your generic computer user running your network operations control. So the way that we would do it is we would send commands through the IRC into the Trojan that would invoke the tokens on their end, not ours, and then send it back to us. So it was all data driven via IRC.
So you would, hold on, okay. So first of all, how would you get the Trojan on the machine?
I bet it's probably common knowledge now, but a lot of the AOL employees actually used AOL, and they weren't nearly as scrupulous as they thought they were. They became victims of social engineering, of downloading things that they shouldn't have, to all the way up to communicating with people on America Online, even sometimes us posing as like 15, 16-year-old girls. Like, they just didn't know what they were doing. So there was always a way to get it in there. The security on AOL just, I'm shocked they lasted as long as they did. I mean, hats off to them because we really put them to the grind, but I can't believe they made it.
So who wrote the Trojan?
The guys in Codin or Codeine or whatever you want to call it, none of them actually used AOL.
That's okay. So it was a Trojan, and it was the command and control was an IRC chat room. You guys would send commands to the machines, but then how did FDO come into play?
We'd invoke it through their terminals. So if we wanted to create a new screen name, we'd invoke the tokens. I think it was NM1 or something like that, that would start the new screen name process, but it would start it on their terminals. And then it would send back to us the response for like a ping packet would come back and say, okay, window's open, what's your next command? And then we'd send it back through their terminals. Everything was done on their end back then because we didn't have the star tool yet. It wasn't leaked or it wasn't out or I don't even know.
Oh, that's really interesting. So when, okay, so let's say when you create a screen name and you send the command, would anything happen on their UI, or would it all just be in the background?
The very first ones that we injected into their systems would open up windows on their end. They would see it. So I can only imagine that they were like frantically closing windows, thinking like, "What the hell is going on here?" But I'm sure they didn't have any idea. They thought there was something freaking out about the system, and it was really just us. But then later on, as we got a little bit better with it, and a couple of us started using America Online more and more, we got more familiar with how FDO worked. And FDO was actually kind of cool in a way and still kind of crappy in a way. It drew everything. So like when you pulled up a chat window, it, there isn't there wasn't a like a like there wasn't a chat window. Atoms and tokens would be used to set up this system, and it would draw windows and boxes and your rich text formats and your lists on the fly. It was creative, but it was easily manipulated. So we could then invoke through their terminals to draw windows on other people's AOL accounts while they're logged in. So you'd have one person logged in who's just sitting there, and then somebody in IRC, or you could even do it yourself if you wanted to, but back then everything was about the group. Everybody wanted to hang out and do things together. So you'd have somebody who was invoking it and drawing it on your screen.
Oh, so you'd run the Trojan on your machine and then someone else would draw stuff on it?
And I'm not sure if that changed, like right around 2000, or if it didn't. I don't remember when AOL 3 came out. I think it was around 2000, wasn't it?
Might have been before 2000, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, it had to have been because I rem it had to have been because I remember we all wanted to stay on 2.5. We didn't want to go to 3, so we would have to search for old disks and old downloads and stuff like that. Actually, a funny story. I just thought of it because that girl Erin that was talking on it. She was talking about how there was open FTPs on their the AOL's quote unquote internet, and was getting flooded by wares. That was us.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, that was Ersi Stern.
Yeah, so I'm you know, it's a little belated, but I apologize now. That was Coden. Coden or Codeine. That was us who did that.
That's great.
We used to run automated scripts, and most of the wares were just, most of it was the same thing. It was all one file. Just it would the script would go through and it would rip the name out of it and put a new name in and upload the exact same files over and over and over again, so that it looked like they were getting blasted with all of this free software, and it was really just like Visual Basic 3 or something. Like that was the only program or something like that, whatever it was. And it just kept going and going and going. So it was funny when I heard her talking about it. I was like, they had to have noticed that we did that because they shut it down, but I don't think they ever knew who did it. So I apologize now for that if you're listening.
That's funny. Wait, why rename the same file and keep uploading it?
Because disk space was so tiny back then. You didn't want to keep all this stuff on your machine. So you'd just have one thing taking up your space on your hard drive and then rename the file and just kept kicking it back up. That way we could run it out of very small machines.
So it's more than one file, because you were saying rename the same file. I'm confused. Rename the same file. Are these different files, or are they the same like hash, file hash, or what are we talking about?
So inside it's the same application, but it would insert like an extra hex character into the application. Everything was dead. If you downloaded it, it wouldn't do anything. It was just taking up space in the drive. So it would rename the file name. So let's say it was CorelDRAW. CorelDRAW would get renamed with Microsoft. I forget what it was called. Was it Office back then? Might have been. And it would just upload the same thing again, but with a new name and extra hex character so that it looked like it was a different size. But if you downloaded any of it wouldn't do anything. You'd never be able to run it. It was really just to mess with them.
Oh, what a dick move.
We weren't using it to like trans like, to like to transfer files or anything. We were just like, hey, these idiots left their FTP open. So it was like FTP bombing in a way.
Okay, now it makes sense. Okay, so same file, relatively same content, just different names.
Yeah, relatively the same file size too. So it's weird that they didn't notice that everything was off by like, 10 kilobytes.
How do you guys know about FDO and like what codes to send and all that? How'd you guys figure that out?
We had to break it down. But this was even before the manual. I forget who finally got the manual. Somebody got an FDO 91 manual and uploaded it. This was before anybody had the FDO 91 manual. So a lot of it was by watching on their end what they were doing and seeing the response that they were getting back. And then, trial and error. And eventually we figured out that there was a like pattern to the way that they named their tokens and the keys that would do things. And we figured out that there was three different ways to invoke tokens. Or I shouldn't say ways, three different tokens that you could invoke. You can invoke a string, just the token itself, or you could invoke it with an integer value, which was all, the strings were all hex code. Like if you wanted to, enter a keyword, you couldn't enter keyword like she's gonna hate me if she hears this. You couldn't enter keyword like food channel. You had to use the hex value for food channel.
The ASCII like equivalent and convert to hex or something.
Well, yeah, the hexadecimal code. So yeah, ASCII is the American standard for character interchange. Hex is just a hexadecimal format of a character. So like, every character on your keyboard has a hex value.
You guys would, so it's almost like methods almost, right? You would send the token and you say I want to do a keyword and you send the right hex value, like so it'd be like whatever the string was of characters. You could, would that be like a parameter almost?
Yeah, you could call it a parameter. It was called arguments back then, but parameter would still work. I lost train of thought. Oh, yeah. So we had people on IRC that had never even used AOL, but we're just so interested in how it all worked that we spent a lot of time, like a lot of time, hundreds if not thousands of hours trying to figure out how FDO worked. I wish we had known there was a manual out there. We could have just found it on somebody's computer in the AOL office and taken it.
That's really funny. I guess maybe it was more fun just figuring it out, though.
Probably was. I mean, what, when you're 13 to 17 years old, what else are you doing? Getting into trouble in other ways, but hey, at least this way was relatively untrackable since AOL didn't care.
So you guys put the Trojans on the machines, were using F2 to create screen names, and what other stuff were you doing with the Trojan besides creating screen names?
You could do pretty much anything you wanted with it. You could invoke, you could change passwords. You could steal cat names, cat toss cat, whatever they were. You could steal their names.
Wait, Catwatch? What, Toss Advisor, Catwatch? You could. What do you mean, steal their names?
You could just log in as them.
What? That's crazy.
You could legit just log in as them. And when the request for password came in, just kill that window and just send the an okay token that it was approved.
Wait, so there's no database or anything that would that would like validate this is. Okay, so the logic to determine whether or not something was valid, you could just say, oh, it's fine, okay, and it wouldn't actually have to validate it, you could just bypass it.
Well, the way that it worked is back then the database was called Merlin, and it kept track of pretty much everybody's information, your login names, your mailing addresses. We used to steal Merlin all the time and sell it. It was hilarious. That's how we made money before YTC made his what billions of dollars spamming affiliate programs. But yeah, so the way that it interacted was you'd send information to the login screen. The login screen would connect to Merlin. Merlin would check to make sure that your credentials were valid and then send back a yes or a no. Just change the no to a yes and you're in. So when you get that no response back from Merlin, you catch it and you ignore it and just tell it okay and that the password was valid when it wasn't.
Okay, so I go to log in, and it's my, so my username, the packet goes for like the for the username over to Merlin. Merlin responds, but then how do you like man the middle Merlin? I guess I'm trying to figure out. Or like, is it because of the way the tokens were sent? You could just tell that token whatever Merlin sent back, you could just tell the system to ignore it somehow.
You could send you could you could build out an atom string so that when the rejection came back and it would have said, incorrect login or whatever, it catches that and ignores it and then sends the token for login.
So did you have like a debugging proxy or something to like see and intercept these requests and modify them?
Yeah. It's the same thing that you guys got, and it worked exactly the same way as you guys got in the star tool later. Much later on, I think there was a debugger in there. We had the same thing. It would monitor the packets as they came in and out and tell us exactly what responses we were getting.
Okay, that's super interesting. So this is like, this all predated that, and it was folks on IRC. That's really funny.
Yeah. This is all the stuff that we used to do that we didn't include in any of our programs. Because, to be honest, nobody should have actually had the star tool or master AOL. I don't forget what we're calling it. I don't even know if they're two different things. I think they're the same thing. Nobody should have had access to that. It was way too dangerous, and it made it way too easy. You could have people that have no idea what they're doing using star tool, and I'm sure there were a bunch of people who downloaded the star tool and had no idea what they were doing, and it just sat in their menu bar, and they never even invoked anything. Because if you don't know how tokens work, how are you going to know what to put in there unless somebody tells you?
I was one of those people. I installed it and I was like, sweet, what do I do with this? And I just kind of forgot about it.
Yeah, because you're hoping that it would work like a proggy, and you'd be able to click buttons and shit, and it didn't work that way. No, the star tool was a pretty advanced method of manipulating the system itself.
You guys would put the Trojan on the machine, change screen names and stuff. You could still catwatch, Toss Advisor.
We could monitor their private chat rooms. We could check their mailboxes. We could read their mail. We could locate people that weren't supposed to be locatable, like the founders, programmers, developers. As long as we had their screen names, we could do that. I mean, pretty much anything that an AOL employee could do, we could do. Except we never did figure out how to listen to phone calls. We really wanted to do that.
The call center phone calls or whatever?
Yeah, we really wanted to do that. But I don't think the two systems were integrated at the time. Now they'd be integrated. We just couldn't find anything even remotely close to it. No way to jump to it, which was weird because Codeine had a couple of freakers in the group and they were dumbfounded. They had no idea how to get to their call system.
What do the freakers do?
Freakers specialize in telecommunications, telephones, and stuff like that. Mostly what they did had nothing to do with AOL. They were more into phone companies. The group was huge in terms of the broad scope, not in terms of the membership, but in terms of everybody's different skill set, which is why we were able to get so deep into America Online Systems, because no one person could have all that knowledge. But you had somebody who knew scripting, had a bunch of people who actually knew FDO. Like, they really delved into it. They probably could have walked onto the AOL campus and just started writing AOL. And then you had hackers that were writing programs and exploring the interface and the limitations and reporting back. And we did the same thing with Prodigy and CompuServe, though I never developed anything for Prodigy or CompuServe.
So speaking of developing, you created the program Lucifer X. Why did you decide to make a program if you could already do all this stuff?
Probably Dachronic. I've only talked to Dachronic a couple of times, and I don't know if he even knew it was me at the time. I think a couple of times he did, but a bunch of times he didn't. There's a guy who had a lot to do with AOL that was left out of the application itself, a guy named Squirrel. And Dachronic left him off of the application. And we were kind of like, that's not cool. Let's go write one to do everything that AOL does just because.
Okay, so that's why in the credits you specifically called out the chronic then, probably.
I think it had a little bit to do with that, and then probably a lot more to do with the fact that Dachronic was like an AOL household name. Everybody who was anybody on AOL at the time knew his name, so it was more like a we don't care who you are.
Yeah, I think I asked him before the episode about you, and he's like, no, I think there was an interview he did with somebody, and this like zine or something, where he asked like if like he you guys knew each other, and I guess he referred to you as like snails instead of nails or something like that as like a diss. I don't
That's a
know.
good one. That's a good one. I talked to him a couple of times, like as Nails, and a bunch of times as just some random guy that he didn't know. We didn't have anything at the time. It's like you're four. I was 14 years old, and he was 17, I think. It's just a period like that age gap right there. You guys have nothing in common. And he was kind of off in his own little world, getting his AO fame. And I mean, more power to him. People liked his application. It worked. It wasn't very well written, but it worked. There were people who really liked him, and people that I used to hang out with and get along with that really liked him, like RZA. I used to get along real well with RZA, and he got along real well with Dachronic. But I just didn't have any interest in knowing him, I guess. I guess I feel like all of his fame was gonna bring a lot of shade down, and I didn't want to be in the hit zone.
Yeah, well, it did. So that was probably a good call.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. My online personality was the complete opposite of the person that I actually was. So if I could avoid getting into trouble for that kind of shit, I definitely tried to. I wasn't looking to be a martyr for AOL.
So wait, what do you mean your online personality was a complete opposite? Sorry, your online personality was a complete opposite of what you were. Could you expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up playing hockey. I was an athlete. I wasn't in it to take down AOL, or I wasn't in it to. I was really only in it to be a nuisance, because I could be, and to learn. there's a lot of founders of tech companies that owe everything they have to the things that they learned at AOL doing exactly what I was doing.
So back to LucidRacks, I noticed, so when you load it, first of all, there's that super sweet artwork. It's like the skull, and I think there is like it's like wearing horns or something. It's like, I don't know. It looks amazing. Where'd you get that picture?
Skull and Horns, that's Lopman. Yeah, he was an artist back in the day. He was into scripting and he was into web design, and he was an artist and he used to do a bunch of stuff. His stuff is all over AOL and it's all over the other services, Prodigy, CompuServe, MSN, for other people's applications, because there were applications for those other services. It just wasn't as widely done. I think it's probably because they were probably better programmed than AOL was. But yeah, he never really got much credit for his art. He just kind of liked doing it. I thought that graphic was sweet. But again, it's the complete antithesis of my personality. I just thought it was sweet looking.
I also thought it was sweet looking when I first saw it. It made me really want to use the program. And then your program was all in the menu bar, which I think was new at the time. Most programs only later were programs up the menu bar like that, I think.
Yeah, I was the first one to do that. And we did it because we kind of had to. I mean, if you look at the application itself, there really isn't much to it. So we had to like wow people with doing something that hadn't been done before.
So how'd you figure out how to put it in the menu bar?
Oh, that's easy. That's just a Win32 thing. I say it's easy. It took forever to figure it out, but I actually figured out how to do it by editing CorelDRAW and adding CorelDRAW menus for things that I did like often, I guess in a macro kind of style. So things that you'd have to go through their interface for in order to get to, I just would put it in a menu on their application. You just hook the application at build time. With API, you can grab all the menus that it's trying to build out and then insert where you wanted to put a menu.
Nice, that's really cool. So then I assume your program used API calls and not send keys.
It did not use SendKeys, no. The first iteration of it, while because the IRC group was, they were like legit developers. They had a whole life cycle development plans and things like that. So the very first iteration was in SendKeys to see how many things we could do, or at least a good chunk of it was, to see how to do it, map it out, put it all together, and then it was all rewritten again in Windows API.
So wait, this is written by more than just you then?
No, this is just by me, but so I grabbed onto their development paths, the way that they did things. So first I built a proof of concept, and a lot of it did use SendKeys because all I was doing was trying to figure out what I could and couldn't do. And then when that was done, I trashed it all and rewrote it in Windows API.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. That's cool. Did you use any like .bis files?
No. If they were out at the time, I didn't know about their existence. I know later that there was BAS32 and Alpha and a bunch of others that got thrown into circulation, but I didn't have any of them. I never hung out in the VB rooms. I didn't even know that they were circulating.
So I noticed your program had a send virus feature. Can you tell me about that?
Deltry, that's all it was. So yeah, you came up with a name that you wanted and a file size, and it would put a bunch of junk code in that did absolutely nothing, and then it wrote a Deltry and it sent it to somebody. So technically it wasn't really a virus. For anybody listening now who's grown up and realized that a Deltry isn't a virus, it wasn't a virus.
So, did you just release one version of LucidRacks?
Yeah, that's the only one. And then I never wrote anything ever again. It's unfair to say I never wrote anything ever again. I kept writing code, but I did it with other people. I've got parts of my code in all kinds of things like Fate and Magenta, and Exorcist was the other one that they did, I think.
So you guys all collaborated then?
There was a lot of collaboration that was going on, but it was kind of like a known thing amongst all of us that credit didn't need to be given to everybody. Like if you're writing an application and you're like, I don't know how to do this function, and somebody writes a function for you, it's yours now. Don't give me credit, just it's your program, go ahead. I got fortunate in that I always got lumped in with the guys who cared more about learning than they did about the recognition. We went back and forth a bunch of times actually with Luciferex about even putting a name on it. I was gonna not put a name on it at first. I forget who convinced me to put a name on it. I think it was a guy named Poe. It was either Poe or Kurtz, one of the two. They're like, no, if you're gonna write something, you gotta put your name on it, man. And I'm like, I was thinking this can only cause trouble. And it did, because I remember for a long time, Nails was a restricted name when creating screen names. You couldn't use it
Like anywhere in the name?
anywhere in the name. You couldn't use it.
Really? That's interesting.
But it was kind of funny. I was like, my little crappy program got a name banned on AOL. The hell is this?
So where do you think that the code for that exists? Like, could that be bypassed if you actually wanted to do a name with nails, like you're talking about with Merlin or whatever, you could bypass stuff? Could you bypass the restricted names or?
Oh yeah, I did. I had the name, but nobody else could create it. I actually still have the AIM name Nails. I think that's how I created it. I'm pretty sure I created it on a international, I think it was like AOL Germany or something, their AIM screen name creator, and then ported it over to AOL America. Because a lot of people don't realize that AOL tried to keep countries separate from each other for a long time.
Like they couldn't talk to each other, like people from different countries.
Yeah, they couldn't talk to each other. They could sh like you could have a German version. You could have a German screen name of, like, let's just say Cat, and you could have the American version of Cat, because they ran off of two separate database silos. They weren't integrated. A lot of the exploits that came out later, those happened because AOL kept all of their data siloed instead of keeping it together.
Can you talk about some of the other exploits then that related to that?
Well, there was the 3-char name, then there was the 1-char name, then there was the 16-character name, and then there was the all lowercase, the one word, and things like that.
Is it the same database schema like in each environment, or they would have like different versions of it where like you could get away with the one car in like one region?
So it was same database schema, different rules.
Oh my God. Why?
And I feel like just knowing as much as I do about AOL and how they operated, I feel like they just forgot to put rules in on certain databases. Like, it's not that they meant to, they just forgot to do it.
Interesting. Or maybe they didn't have a need to oh yeah, we'll eventually up like they roll out the latest release in America, and they're like, yeah, we'll eventually do these other countries, and they just never got around to it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they had Merlin had like stored procedures and things like that, the same way that an Oracle or a SQL database would have. And it's almost like they just didn't copy them over, and they thought they did. But you'd think they'd have somebody go through and verify that everything was copied over, but maybe they were just too small to be moving so fast. I don't know.
I think some of this still persists today. Like if you're like doing a pen test, you can find out all of the endpoints across the world for something, and even though it's supposed to be the same API endpoint, they'll behave differently, right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's probably true. You'd think how big AOL was, they'd have somebody that was like checking one to one from the America version and the, let's say, German version or whatever, that all of the correct stored procedures and rules and shit had been copied over. But you'd always find that there weren't.
There is like a weird thing with companies where you'll want to like clone what you're doing. Like, okay, we have this product, it's great. Now we want to clone it and we want to like rebrand it or something. And there's the option, okay, we can totally rewrite the code base. It'll take 6 months. Or we could just make a copy of it and just run it in this other data center. And we can do it now, but we'll have lots of problems down the road. And of course, leadership's like, do it now, do it now.
Of course, they picked the do it now. And I don't really have much of an issue with that. I mean, you got to get it up and running. But the point is, once they do that, and they knew that there were going to be issues down the line, they should have started tackling those issues, but they didn't.
Yeah, I would have seen the past as like project management and leadership. They'll promise the developers, oh, there'll be time to fix it. There'll be time to fix it. And then there never is. There's always some other priority.
It is. And I don't want to be too hard on America Online because it was the Wild West and they were doing a lot and they were a much smaller company than most people would think that they were, especially when they started out, and especially in the early to mid 90s. So I'm not throwing too much shade their way. I think they did an amazing job for what they were. You've got millions of people who can say their first experience with the internet was AOL, but little things that they did were just flabbergasting. Like, why would you do it this way? And I was 15 years old, and I'm thinking to myself, why would you do it this way?
So how did you find all those people on IRC and like learn all the stuff that you were learning?
Well, I started on IRC back in Ireland, probably like 89. My father was worked for a computer corporation back then. So we had computers lying all over the house, which is probably why I started with a Tandy I'm sure it was a Tandy now. And then I got a Commodore, which I think is backwards. Most people would get the Commodore and then the Tandy. But I liked the Commodore better. Yeah, I just started messing around with IRC, trying to figure it out. And I think the best part about IRC is there wasn't really an interface for it. So you really had to understand what was going on in order to even use it, especially back then. And you just meet people by asking questions. I was always an inquisitive person. I always wanted to know. I didn't want to know how to do something. I wanted to know why I was doing it. So if people were like, just put this in there, I would be like, no, I want to know, like, why am I just putting this in there? What is it doing? A lot of the older developers, I mean, a lot of the guys in the IRC that I was hanging out with were professionals. They were in their 20s. They liked the idea of mentoring. And it is, I think that's still very much something that goes on in the software industry. Those kinds of people, they enjoy people who ask questions. What do you mean, why? Nobody ever asks why. They just want to know how. And I said, no, I had more interest in the why. So I just kind of got grabbed up, and we got moved around into groups, and I started meeting all these people who were just so brilliant. Like, their understandings of network topology and security and hashes and algorithms, and even back then, was just so far ahead of really anybody else that I just felt myself drawn to them. I wanted to be around them. I wanted to learn as much as I could.
So what did that lead to? Like, where did you, because you said that you would leave AOL and kind of come back and mess around a little bit. And then, like, when did you finally decide to, like, leave AOL? And I don't know if you're still on IRC, but what happened there?
No, I'm not on IRC anymore. What happened with AOL? I found Linux. And I was much more interested in figuring out how Linux worked for a long time. And AOL started to take, I was dual booted from like 98 until 99, 2000, so that I could use AOL every once in a while just to hop on. I mean, the thing is, it's a little bit more socially acceptable now to have like your internet friends than it was in the 90s. In the 90s, it wasn't really accepted to have internet friends, but you do build friendships and you really enjoy talking with those people and I guess nerding out with people who are interested in the same things that you are. So I always felt myself drawn back to it for a long time, even though AOL wasn't, I didn't even really want anything to do with it in the beginning. To begin with, we just kind of decided, guys, we need people on AOL now. And I was like, I'll go. I've never even used it before. I'll go figure it out.
Wait, what do you mean we need people on AOL? So like, can you explain that more?
Codeen, however you want to pronounce it. They had this idea that they were going to take over all the online services. And they didn't have people who were using, too many people who were using AOL. It's just me and Squirrel, which is why I think we got mad at Dachronic, because he was in with us. And so you couldn't really just send somebody over to AOL and be like, okay, take it over. You had to kind of work your way into the people who that's the only service they used. They knew the most about it. As much as I'll bash, and I'm sure if he kept with it, I don't know if he kept with programming or not. I'm sure if he did, he's really good at it now. As much as I'll bash the how poorly written the first iteration of AOL was, DeKronic knew a lot about AOL, like the way that it worked and how things did what they did. So even though I didn't really want anything to do with America Online, I found myself really enjoying the time on it. It was a good time. Even if you weren't doing anything, even if you're just logging in and sitting around and listening to somebody else tell a story about what they were doing, it was fun. And I think that all goes back to none of us really knew what we were doing. We were all figuring it out together.
I'm thinking about when you said take over all the online services. Like what does that look like? Like what is it? What is the definition of done for that?
I don't know what their plan was, to be honest. What were we gonna do once we did? We didn't even make that big of a splash to begin with. Yeah, there were people in the IRC group that went to CompuServe, that went to Prodigy, and they did the exact same thing to those services that we all did to AOL. Those services just weren't as big, so it didn't get noticed as much, I guess. Or you never know. Maybe there is somebody like you doing this exact same thing for Prodigy.
It's possible too. So were there Prodigy Trojans too?
Oh yeah, and MSN, they were out there. I didn't get involved much in it because the AOL did kind of eat me up for a while. I got really, really involved in it, and IRC took a it did take a back seat for a while. I'd always be in IRC while I was on AOL, and I'm sure that the guys who were doing Prodigy and were doing CompuServe and MSN, they did the exact same thing that I did, but they were involved in that part of it. So there was like a grand like plan from the higher ups. I mean, back then the IRC groups, they did work in pecking orders. There was people who were more in charge than others, and I was never at the top of it because I was the young kid.
So wait, so what was the name of the group you were, was it Codeine?
Yeah.
And so who do you remember from Codeine?
I can't. We all went by first names back then. Not a lot of them had handles. It was just their name. Yeah, I didn't have a handle until I came to AOL.
So you went to AOL and you're like, well, I tried to create your screen name or nickname, didn't work, already taken. It's like, all right, I guess I need something else, right?
No, they actually told me they're like, you've got to come up with some. You've got to come up with a handle. It can't be just your name like it is here. And so I did. And I don't even remember why I picked Nails. It was probably because of the WWE wrestler. At that point in time, yeah, I'm sure it was. I'm sure it was. But yeah, so I mean, later when more and more people were getting online, like in the 98, 99, all those guys, they started taking handles too, just because they were much. It was a much broader amount of people who were online and you were interacting with, and the trust level wasn't there anymore. You know, in the earliest stages of the internet, the trust, it was a lot easier to trust people because there just weren't as many of them online.
So speaking of WWE wrestlers, do you remember the Bushwhackers?
Oh, hell yeah. I remember all those guys. I watched wrestling when I was a kid. I ain't ashamed of it.
That's funny. They were like my favorite man. They kept like they like licked the back of their palm or whatever, like, and then they would like rub it on their bald head. It made no sense.
It didn't make any sense at all. Tag team. I was a Rockers guy. The Rockers, Bret Michaels and Marty Jannetty. I liked that high flying stuff. I don't know why. To our credit, or at least defense, it wasn't as widely known that wrestling is a complete sham back then as it is now. You could almost trick yourself into believing it was real if you wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, when I was that young, I was like, I thought it was real, and then I was just like, but I also kind of questioned it, like, how are these guys keep getting back up, like a cartoon, you know?
Well, they were able to get away with not having to say that it's fake. Nobody was really telling them that they can't do that. They can't portray this as real. And you know, now you absolutely can't get away with it. And they had to tell you that it's sports entertainment and not sports. But in the early 90s, in the late 80s, early 90s, if you wanted to believe it was real, they were going to let you. They didn't say no, it's not.
Cool. So after you kind of left the scene, what did you end up doing professionally?
I was on AOL, I think, right up until my senior year of high school. And then I left AOL. I went off, oddly enough, train as a bull rider, try to break into the PRCA, the Pro Rodeo Circuit. Then 9/11 happened. It's kind of one of those things, like being an immigrant, being so welcomed and given so many opportunities, I enlisted in the Navy. So no, I don't program anymore. I mean, I do because my kids do. I help them, but they're probably better at it than I am at this point.
Are you still enlisted, or are you done with that, or?
Still in, 22 years and going.
Nice, nice. Is there anything else you want to share from your time back then?
No, I think we covered a lot of it. I mean, a lot of the other guys that were involved in the scene were more involved in it than I was, or at least they have a lot more credit to their name. I know that there's still a lot of people who do remember me, but I never wanted it that way. I just kind of wanted to learn and have fun. And, I was never going to be a Bryce Case, which is, I mean, I got the pleasure of meeting Whitey Cracker in the 2000s. I forget what year it was. It was early 2000s. That dude's a fucking riot. He's really, really, really smart. Brilliant guy. But no, like, it just wasn't something that I ever really would have thought that I was going to get myself involved in. The amount of knowledge that was out there that was untapped was just, it was too enticing. It was too much fun to be able to mess with people. And we knew that there was a cat and mouse game going on with AOL and all of us that just kind of made it so much more fun that way. Like, we know you're trying to catch us. We know you want to just to know who we are, but we're not going to let you. But we did have a lot of fun. I think that you get a lot more interesting stories out of people who were using AOL in the 2000s than you do out of people in the early 90s or mid 90s, just because we were pioneers of it. It's not like we had any kind of reference guide that we could look at and say, this is what we should be doing, this is how we should be doing it, and these are the reasons why. And I think that some of the younger generation, I'm not that old, but some of the guys who came around in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, they got to benefit from better languages, better software, more knowledge, more people who were knowledgeable. Back then, there was only like a handful of people that really had any idea what they were doing, and they were all in God's online. So yeah, we got into trouble. We did. Gave America Online a run for its money, and they probably rued the day they switched from Quantum Link to America Online and let us on. But I'm almost certain that they had as much fun as we did, 'cause it was like cops and robbers or cowboys and Indians. It was just a different day in terms of the internet. And I kind of wish that the younger generation, like the generations that my kids are in, got to experience something like that, because I don't think we'll see it again. It really was like before the internet. What did you do before the internet? Well, this is what I did.
That's great. Yeah, that's a great way to summarize it, man.
I think we're all better for it. All of us who stayed out of jail.
All right, dude, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, it was fun talking to you, dude. You take care.
Hack the planet. Hack the planet.
If you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email podcast@aolunderground.com.
Welcome to cyberspace.